This is Chasing Encounters, a podcast about stories, languages, cultures, and identities. We highlight diversity and intersectionality in contemporary society through respectful and thought-provoking conversations. Welcome, everybody. This is Chasing Encounters number 11. Today we have another special guest. She's from Colombia as well, and she's visiting Toronto because of the ARA conference for everybody. So today we have Nancy Carvajal. Hello, Nancy.
Hello, Yacid. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm excellent. Thank you for the space.
How do you like Toronto so far? You arrived yesterday, right?
Yes, I was walking around in the night when I got here, and yeah, I like it so far. I think it's a pretty nice city with a nice view, so I expect to see more in the coming days.
Awesome. So to start this podcast, I would like to know a little bit more about yourself, your family, your community, your education. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Thank you, Jesse. Yes, my name is Nancy Carvajal Medina. I was born and raised in a small little rural town, a coal mining town that is called Socha, located in the Andean region in Colombia, South America. And my parents, my grandparents are farmers, and my parents were also farmers as well. So I'm coming from those rural backgrounds that inform a lot of my positionality and the ways I see the world and the ways I relate to other people and the ways I conduct my research. So that's a little part of who I am. I also see myself in this sense as a self under construction or a human being under construction, because I don't think that there is any label that can really illustrate who I am as a human being. No labels coming from gender or from race or from class can really tell you who Nancy is. I think that what can tell you who Nancy is the way I talk, the way I relate to other people, and the way I act in different spaces. So that's how you can get a real sense of who I am. So that's a little bit of what I can tell you about myself. And professionally speaking, I have a master's in language teaching from a university in Colombia that I'm currently working for. It's Universidad Pedagógica y Tecnológica de Colombia, Pedagogical and Technological University of Colombia. And I also got my PhD as a Fulbright Scholar from Washington State University. My PhD is in Cultural Studies and Social Thought in Education. So I say hi to all my community in Pullman and the Palouse. And currently, I work as an academic advisor for the vice president of the university, UPTC. That's what I'm currently doing.
Nice, Nancy. I am so glad to hear your comments on the idea of a human being under construction. I totally see myself the same, you know, like we are in this world and then we don't know who we are until we are in relation with the others. And the idea that we are not the people or the person who were yesterday, I like it a lot. And I also like the idea that you're all working in these spaces in which you can give some advice to administration about how to do things in a different way. So I'm glad to hear this first things. So moving on to our actual theme of the day, we have prepared various topics for today. And the first one that I would like to hear from you is the idea of social justice. So if you want to make a couple of comments on what social justice is and what social justice is for you as a, both as a person and as a scholar.
Yes, I think it's important to recap a little bit of the things that you were saying before, because I totally agree in the sense that we need to understand that we are responsible for one another. So that's when we start listening about topics such as interconnectedness. But in the practice, we don't really get to know how do we interconnect to one another. So I think that knowing and understanding how oppression takes place and how it operates, it has increased my responsibility to my communities, and my communities are the communities, academic or non-academic communities, with whom I have the opportunity to exchange in whatever places I occupy. So when I came to the U.S. in 2013 to conduct my doctoral studies, I was exploring what the realities of the context were. So what were some of the oppressive or discriminatory realities experienced? So I encountered homelessness or houselessness. That is the alternative term that I propose in my dissertation to use, following some critical scholars' perspectives on redefining what this reality means. So I think that, yeah, when I came, so I started working and exploring on rural, U.S. rural houselessness. And then while being in Colombia, before I came here, I was also working with displaced youth and children in the country. So I think that social justice work for me means being able to respond to the needs of the community, being open and critical and being a good listener. For me not to adopt, you know, a judgmental position, and for me not to impose my own realities or my own views on other people's lives. So that's why I'm saying that what you said in terms of us interconnecting to one another means like really getting to exchange those experiences that are helping us to enlarge or expand the view of how we can survive or live in this existence. I think that at the end of the day, that's what we are here for, like learning some lessons while we are here and supporting one another, and then eventually just, continue growing and continue becoming that something else that we are not completely sure or certain about, because we are always becoming, no matter what. And the ways we become are informed by the experiences we have and the people we encounter in our lives. So for me, social justice is looking for the ways and taking the actions for my individual transformation, for communities' transformation, and a strengthening of the communities. Because I don't think that having a lot of policies on equity, you know, and inclusion is gonna secure that those policies be implemented. I think that if communities and individuals are transformed in the ways we see one another, that's when social justice practices can really have an impact and be a reality.
Wow, I love this. What you're saying totally resonates with the work that I also do in the sense of social justice and language teacher education around the world, like in Latin America and elsewhere. And I totally relate to what you're saying. Another topic that I'm very, very interested in discussing today with you, and I know you're an expert in a sense because you've been working with the communities as well, is I want to pick your brains on what is your stance on the concept of the colonization, and also because I've been reading a lot of the work of Silvia Rivera Cusicanqui, and she talks about a lot about descolonización, and not necessarily about decolonization, but descolonization, which is way beyond of our conceptualization in North America of decolonization. So I wonder, what are your thoughts on these concepts?
Yes. So when I came here to the States, I was confronted, let's say, with positioning in a specific way. So obviously, sometimes in Western academia, people or scholars expect you to label yourself and to name yourself by labeling yourself. So in one of my first courses on cultural studies, when my professor asked, how do you name yourself or how do you define yourself? The only thing I could think of was, oh, well, in general terms, I'm just a human being under construction. So that's how I started this conversation with positioning myself in those terms. And then looking back at my process of 5 years, I think that since that first course, I was starting to resist a little bit, you know, Western educational tradition that demands from individuals to put themselves into boxes without fully comprehending or understanding what those big boxes really mean and what are the constraints and limitations of those boxes that I call labels. And then also without portraying the complexity of what it means to be a human being, right? Unique and diverse. So I think that early in my career, I was coming close to this resistance and this engaging into these decolonizing ways of thinking of ourselves and doing our research and academic work. So I started also approaching Chicana, Latina, and indigenous scholars during 2 years, And then that's when I started understanding even my place of origin. So what does it mean for Nancy to have been born in a small rural mining town? What does it mean to be like the third generation of women in her family, to be able to have even economic independence? What does it mean to be autonomous in the kinds of decisions that I have been able to make in terms of being married or not, of having children or not? So looking back at my mom's stories and my grandma's stories, so they didn't have that possibility. My grandma got married when she was 12, and my mom got married because she wanted to get out of the rural area. And so their stories are stories of a strong, courageous women, but who had to be, you know, regulated, whose actions and behaviors and feelings kept on being regulated by their families, by their economic position, because, you know, in rural areas in Colombia, so people don't have, they make a living out of the crops and the harvest, but that is not too much. So I was listening recently about my great grandma's story and how she was having issues even to have a baby back in the day. So she was hung up from the ceiling, from her feet, in order for the baby to be repositioned in the womb because he was not in the right position and they didn't have access to medical services. So it was like what we call la partera, these expert women who have all the experience or knowledge because of the experience, not because they were educated or went to university to learn how to raise or bring a baby into the world. But these women, parteras, were the ones who allowed my grandma to be born. And so I was listening to all these stories during the past days. So I think that what I have learned from Chicana, Latina, and indigenous scholars is that in the process of decolonizing ourselves, our stories are important. Our life stories are meaningful. And they are the ones who can really take us always back home to who we are and what is really important and what matters. So that's part of what I've been learning from this wonderful kind of scholar. So that's one first important step in decolonizing.
I totally agree with you in the idea that stories and our stories are part of our lives and they are meaningful and always take us back home, right? And also because living in North America and living in these spaces, it's sometimes difficult to go back home. And sometimes it's difficult to connect with our communities, especially because North American ways of knowing and being is a little bit more like independent. The idea, they value the idea of you as a human being independent. So sometimes you end up being a little bit isolated, and it's a lot of struggle for folks who are coming from the South. Right. So I love it when you talk about the colonizing as the idea of connecting with the stories and the stories of our families and like how they have become strong.
And you know that not only in the U.S. we have this whole like environment of what I see as the impact or the influence of neoliberalism in academia. So we all get into this competition and individualism because the Ministry of Education in Colombia, for example, they follow the trends of Europe, of the US, that are adding into these rhetorics that if you want to be successful, a successful professional, so then you need to compete with the other, right? So you need to do research in order to be classified as an A, B, C, or D researcher. But at the end of the day, that doesn't really say much about the impact of your research or how you support communities. I'm not saying that people who are doing research to publish papers or to get a name out there are doing it wrong. I'm not saying either that people need to do community work in order for the research to be meaningful. But I'm saying that in my case, when I talk about a decolonizing and social justice work, this makes sense only when I work with, for, and by communities. So when I am isolated and I buy into this idea of competition, so I am losing my purpose. I think that that's one of the evil things we have in academia in Colombia now as well. So people are competing, and in the name of competition, they are using students, you know, to publish. So they take their ideas, and in the name of competition, they are plagiarizing ideas, which is something that happened to me when I recently came back to my home institution in 2018. So people are just taking other people's works to make presentations and to publish, and they don't see anything unethical in those behaviors because the system is asking you for you to produce, to publish. But unfortunately, when people don't have ideas, so they just go and listen to others and they just put them as their own work. So I think that that's something negative from this kind of educational and academic spaces.
Yes, unfortunately, this is how things are happening out there, and this is product of obviously of capitalism and neoliberalism, the idea of we have to be in this rat race every day competing to get the best spot out there, right? And mm-hmm. then it's certainly permeating into countries in the global south, and we take it for granted that whatever knowledges that are coming from the north are the ones to be followed, and then somehow we have forgotten that there are knowledges, as you mentioned earlier, that are equally valid. And then unfortunately, out there is these people who think there are these types of knowledges. Some are more valid than others. Certainly, Boaventura de Sousa Santos have talked about this abysmal line in which there are some knowledges that are above and there are some others that are below. And then yet we keep perpetuating this idea, right? And certainly the AERA conference is one of those in which we are here members of this club of the best cutting edge research. Yet sometimes I am fearful that other types of research, like you were saying, community-based research, is not being validated as research. So one question for you that I want to discuss is, how can these mindsets being dismantled, that mindset of production and competition, especially in academia, what do you have any thoughts about how can we do this?
Yes, actually, coming back to Colombia, so I've been training pre-service teachers, EFL, English as a Foreign Language, pre-service teachers in Colombia for 10 years now. And then returning to Colombia in 2018, I had the possibility to teach two courses and design two courses using the lens of social justice education, because that is not something that we very often talk about in Colombia. So we don't train pre-service teachers with that social justice lens. So then I took the challenge of designing two courses under that lens and trying to see what happened throughout the process of 1 year of working with the students. So I have seen some positive things, but I also have encountered some challenges and some things for me to continue thinking about. So some of the positive things that I have found is that, first of all, I have been able to sense or perceive, and students have talked about their individual transformation in little actions, in little ways. So I have this case of one of my students who is from upper middle class, and he said that he used to think, he lived in the capital city of Bogota, of Colombia, Bogota, and he used to think that the solution for people living in the streets, you know, houseless people, was for them to be murdered and disappeared by the state. So after taking the course, we were in a circle, like exchanging experiences about the class, and then he opened his heart and talked to us about this attitude that he had back in the day, and how now, after having been in the course for 2 or 3 months, he had reevaluated his thoughts and his behavior, and he considered that he had been, you know, the meanest person in the world for thinking that murdering houseless people was the solution to a problem that's more, you know, structural than individual. So that's only one of the examples of individual transformation in the mindsets of my students, pre-service teachers, that I have been able to witness in the process of 1 year. So I think that what has took us to that state of in mindset transformation or reshaping, it has taken us like reading other kinds of texts that they are not exposed to, that speak about diversity, that speak about LGBTQI rights, that speak about identity from different lenses. It has taken us for them to also get into the community as part of the course. So I invited them to take in a local community and do a little action. And from those community actions, they started to also develop their awareness. It has taken us to be taken from us to be in other international conferences or national conferences where they could share their experiences and get some feedback from the people. So it hasn't been an easy process. If you talk to one of my students, they will tell you that at the beginning, they said, oh, who's this teacher? Like, she's kind of crazy. What is she talking about? What is all this social justice thing? What does social justice education has to do with us if we are just going to teach English or French or Spanish? So they didn't get it at the beginning. So the level of trust that we have at this point is that good so that they can come to me and tell me these kind of things that I'm sharing now with you. So they told me like, oh, yeah, we thought you were totally nuts. Like, this is not going to work. Okay, but let's do it and let's start the journey. But now, as a group, they are very close, and as a group, they have developed this sense of community to some extent. But also, there have been some challenges. You know, I had one course. This is like the course that I can account for the 1 year process. But I also had one course that I couldn't finish teaching because of the strikes that we were having in the country in the second part of the 2018. And I could only be with them for 6 weeks. And after the 6 weeks, the students were saying, oh, we don't want to talk about social justice anymore. So they were resistant, you know, to this kind of conversation. So then I started talking to them. Okay, that's totally fine. That's okay. But let's explore a little bit the reasons why you don't want to talk about this. And what I could perceive is that one of the biggest challenges in public institutions educating pre-service teachers is how accustomed and used they have got to the traditional ways of being trained and the traditional ways of being evaluated. So they just wanted in my course, an 8-semester course, to continue being taught grammar and listening and speaking. So they just see their training as EFL educators as being able to speak perfectly a language, nothing to do with really reading the realities of their classrooms and beyond the classrooms. So that's one of my conclusions of that process with some of my students, is that yes, there's a resistance on their part because the system has trained them to see themselves from a specific angle and perspective, and moving beyond that angle is going to be challenging. I mean, we need to do more work in order for them to start seeing that they are not only a brain to be filled with knowledge, but as our Chicana, Latina, and indigenous people remind us, we are mind, body, and spirit. So that's an important component of decolonizing work, and that's what I've been trying to do in my social justice work, is bringing people to the understanding that we have felt fragmented for so much time. And education is the ways we teach and the ways we make part of educational spaces are the ones that are contributing to that fragmentation. Because what education promotes and favors is how smart you are. So how many theories you can replicate, how many big words can you use or can you say in a sentence. So that is the ideal, you know, scholar, that is the ideal researcher, the one who can cite you many papers or many studies. So education is promoting that, like, you are your brain, but not your body and your spirit, not your heart, not what you're feeling, not your spirituality. How do you connect to nature? How do you connect to other people? How do you connect to an almighty being? So I think that's one of the biggest challenges that I have encountered with pre-service teachers in Colombia.
This conversation is getting very stimulating, Nancy. So we want more crazy people like you in this planet, as your students and other people have said that we are crazy. So I think the crazier this world is, the better for everybody. Another quick question that I wanted to ask in relation to what you just said is, it made me think when you told me about this person agreeing of killing personas en condición de calle, like homeless people in Colombia. I wonder, in your opinion, Where do you think is this attitude, this discourse, this mentality coming from? Where are people out there getting these ideas that this is right to do?
Yeah, I think that the ways we approach or the ways we think that are, might be the solutions for realities like this are informed by the experiences and the backgrounds of the people. So that's why I mentioned that he was an upper middle class student, because that is his reality and that is his bubble. You know, so people that come from a working environment have a different set of realities or experiences that are informing the ways they see the world. People who are more privileged, you know, that have never had an issue with food or clothing or with studying. So those students that whose parents have been provided have provided everything for them, so they will not understand what it means to struggle, to experience hunger, to maybe make a wrong decision in your life and having a turn of things and end up being in the street. So I think that all of us come, or our own realities come in a bubble. And if we don't get into interaction with other kinds of people that are different from us, that's when we are not able to trespass the boundaries that are dividing us. And that's when we cannot trespass the boundaries into decolonizing and social justice work. So as part of my course, I was invited and I was graphically representing these two bubbles to my students. And then I said, so you bring your bubble is your beliefs, your education, your family, your background, your experiences, your religion, your political affiliation, your identity, you know, formation, your identity, sexual identity. All these markers make you who you are, and you have been living in that bubble until you get into encounter another person who might be not completely but different from who you are and who has a different reality. So my invitation in the course was, okay, so see each other as these two bubbles that are going to try to find a middle point in order for you to mediate your view of the reality, and together you can build a third space in order for you to take action and transform whatever it is that you may want to approach. So that's also in Chicana Latina feminism, we speak about that third space, or the space of possibility, where we can, from my perspective, put in conversation our experiences, our bubbles, all the information that comes in our bubbles, and we can negotiate meaning and understanding, and we are resignifying ourselves again, but at the same time, we are taking action as a community and leading to transformation.
These are very interesting thoughts, Nancy. What I can tell from this answer is that some of these things happen because people are in this bubble that you have called, and I'm assuming this is the privilege bubble, right? Like in which a lot of people, especially people in upper classes, socioeconomic statuses, right, are. So I wonder, how can we burst that bubble? Is there a way to burst that bubble? And I know you're already doing it, but is there an extra thought that you want to add to this idea of bursting that bubble?
Yeah, I think it's engaging students. In my case, what it took is for having a teacher that understood how oppression operated, who had been working on the field with different communities, who was willing to invite students into the conversation. I think that it's engaging students and bringing their lives and their realities into the space. So if I tell you about my first class, the first encounter with those students was for me to ask them three key questions. So I told them in the first class, okay, I'm going to ask you three questions, and I want you to represent those questions not in words, but in an image. So those three questions are, where do you think you're coming from? Who do you think you are? And why are you here? So those were three questions that we were retaking by the end of the 1 year process. And students were making this analysis on their first painting and their final painting, and they could evidence this kind of evolution or growth that I've been talking a little bit about. But what the first class, so that was a disruptive class, because they told me they had never been asked these kind of questions. They had never been asked who they are. They had never been asked what is the purpose of them studying to become an EFL teacher in Colombia. and they had never been asked where they were coming from. I mean, I was telling them, you can take those questions as literal or, you know, as metaphoric as you want. So you can speak about the places you're coming from, the knowledges you're coming from, and you can speak about your mind, your body, and spirit in defining who you are. So for them, well, it was hard, you know, to start finding answers because they had never taken the time during their formation process to think about those three questions. So I think that, yes, this takes like engaging students into a different kind of conversations, reading critical work, being in contact with communities, and being in constant dialogue so that we can analyze, okay, so yeah, this is going right, or this is not going okay, or I've been feeling uncomfortable, or obviously during this process, there were some conflicts emerging. So how do we respond to conflict? You know, when there is conflict in a community that is starting to be built, not on competition, but on caring for one another. So there is conflict when we build a community that cares about community, but not about a score, right? So I was telling them, like, the score, I can give you a 5 right now, right? But that doesn't tell me much about what is expected from this course, that it's what is that possibility or opportunity that you're giving yourself to embrace your whole identity and your whole persona. In terms of what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what your expectations are, and what are those processes of your identity constructions. Because the pre-service teachers I'm talking about are still in their, you know, teenage years. Like, they are 16, 17, 20. They're very in range. So they are still figuring out. So they don't fit in the world. They have conflicts with their families. They don't have friends. They feel isolated. They don't find value in themselves. They have suicidal thoughts. So all of this complexity of being found a space in the class. So when they came into class, they felt like they could breathe, and literally saying one of my students' words. So she said, like, oh, coming into this class is like, I want to be here. Like, oh, this is a whole new other world outside competition, the score, the test, and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's part of the process.
I think we need more teachers like you. I think we need more teacher educators like you who understand the issues, who can engage students in critical pedagogies that are culturally relevant for their lives and their context. So before finishing today's podcast, are there any burning thoughts that you want to share with us today, Nancy?
Well, I think that my purpose in life, understanding one's purpose in life, I think that informs everything we do. I mean, the Nancy who's talking to you here is not the Nancy researcher or the Nancy, you know, academic, but is the Nancy who positions herself in all the dimensions of her life, tries to bring everything that I have talked about today in my relationships with my nephews, with my mom, with my brothers, having the difficult conversations, because obviously coming from a very Catholic family, you know, it's hard to talk about certain things. And I have had difficult conversations with my mom about, you know, sexuality, about discrimination, about race, because her religion taught her a certain view. So I think that my invitation is just to find our purpose in life. Once we find it, everything we do in research, in academia, and in different spaces that we move will make sense. And we will never feel that this is a work at all. So I don't feel that I'm working or that I'm struggling to sustain my job or anything like that. I do everything I do is because I feel passionate. I found my passion and I found my purpose. And I think my purpose in life is serving, learning from others, always becoming, growing and learning some lessons that might allow me to create a critical and empathetic community. So my message is find your purpose in life, and I hope that that purpose has to do with us transforming and serving communities.
We would like to see a passionate person like yourself in the near future. We would like a human being who cares about one another, an advocate for more decolonizing, critical, and indigenizing pedagogies and research methodologies in the future. Nancy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Yesid, for the invitation, and thank you everyone for listening and always willing to connect to anyone who may be interested in talking about this work. So yeah, you can contact me through nancy.carvajal, C-A-R-V-A-J-A-L, at uptc.edu.co. So you can contact me and we can keep on the conversation, or on social media, Nancy Carvajal Medina. So I am very interested in making an international network of critical caring thinkers.
This is Yesid Ortega. This is Canada's hottest new podcast. We go places that others are afraid to go, because it's time to flatten the hierarchies. So how do you like Toronto, Nancy, so far?
I love it. I've been like sneaking around the train station, so it's been pretty interesting to figure out all the exits and entrances without me losing the money of the first.
What do you mean losing the money?
Like, I've been paying to get in the train station, and then I exit without getting on the subway, actually. So then I have to pay again.